This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Sandy Kearney, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 97, The Laws of Online World Design. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful Friday, which is the day of the fry. As in Futurama? No. Friday, as in the goddess Frey? I think that's where it's from, to be honest, because
no, you know, way it is Friday because the state fair is on.
And you deep fry everything. Someone was telling me the other day about the newest deep fried thing. And it was...
It's chocolate-covered bacon that's fried or something.
No. It was like you took something and you shoved it inside of a Twinkie. And then you wrapped the Twinkie in bacon and then you deep-fried it. And I was like... Anyway, so we have a really, really exciting show for you today. And I am so glad, happy it is Friday. And I'm here with my co-host, Michael Martin.
Hey there. I'm glad to be here, too. And I'm now looking up Fair Food, the best fried foods from State Fair from delish.com.
Ooh, we should put that in the show notes.
Because it could be delish.
It could be delish.
Chicken fried bacon.
Chicken delish.
That's from Texas.
So that's like deep fried bacon wrapped in breading.
So here, let me get you the link, right? You know, because I got to share this stuff.
This is what this show is all about. It's all about deep fried food.
So yeah.
Oh that's my God, that just looks disgusting.
Fried avocado bites. That could be pretty good. All right. Yeah. Right, there we go.
Okay.
Spaghetti,
what happened?
Meatball on
an
a stick.
Ad popped up.
Fried frog's legs. Yeah, sure. No biggie. I've seen that before. A hot beef sundae.
Hot beef sundae? Oh, that's disgusting looking. I mean, it looks like a chocolate sundae, but it's chopped beef with, what is that, sour cream on top?
Yes.
And cheddar cheese and a cherry tomato to look like a sundae.
Pizza cones, that's pretty good, which actually, when I was in Hungary, there was a variety of this where you had sort of like a cone of bread and a little, you know, plastic fork thingy, and inside that cone of bread would be various sausages.
Cone of fat.
Kind of like a cone of sausage.
So the Krispy Kreme sick chicken sandwich, that's like the Krispy Kreme burger, that's got to be bad for you.
Deep fried Twinkies. Yeah, no kidding. That's what he's getting. Fried Coca-Cola. I was wondering if that was coming up. That's pretty good.
Fried Coca-Cola.
Yeah, you freeze it and you fry it. Lime pie on a stick. Yeah, okay. That's pretty good, too.
On a stick.
On a stick.
On a stick. All right. So we have a show.
Do we have a show for you?
We do have a show.
We start you off with fried foods and comfort and state fairs and stuff like that. But, Michael, boy, did you dredge something up that actually is, like, so spot on target?
I think I did. So years... Years ago.
How many years ago was it?
It was many, many years ago. It was back shortly after you and I both stopped playing Dancing with Wookiees.
Yes.
We learned of a gentleman by the name of Raph Koster. And if you haven't looked up Raph Koster by now, you need to do it right now. So stop what you're doing. Look it up. And go to Raph's website. Raph was one of the original designers of Star Wars Galaxies before it all got munged up, and a game designer. And I was talking with somebody this morning about, you know, games at work, which is something I am wont to do on a Friday. And I remembered kind of the design rules of a good online world that Raph Koster came up with a group of other game designers. And about the different types of gamers that there are and how a well-rounded game will attract each of these type of gamers. And the way I simplify this is there's three types of gamers. There are explorers who like, you know, get enjoyment out of
looking, you know, exploring the online world and going and getting rid of the fog of war or uncovering parts of the map or just kind of going to different places in the space to find things. There are questers who like to really do the process of the game and follow storylines and, you know, get the quest and go from step A to step B to step C. And then there are crafters, and crafters are the people who like to play the game in order to get the components that are used to build and create new things. You know, a great game that I think is crafter-centric is obviously Minecraft, right?
Uh-huh.
A great game that is quester-designed would be pretty much any of the games that you and I are playing right now that are consuming all our free time, like the quest for stuff, where you get a little mission, and then you do that mission, and another mission, and you do that mission, and it's just constant mission after mission after mission. In a great exploration game.
I'm on a quest for fun.
You're on a quest for stuff.
No, I'm on a quest for fun.
Exploration one, I always find that whenever a new release of World of Warcraft or any of the MMOs came out, or even Skyrim back in its day, you know, just uncovering the map was always a great exploration event. And so I was talking with an individual today, we were talking about games at work, and I was like, what would be fun or appropriate is when we look at gamification in business, can we take those same three types of gamers and apply them to individuals in a corporation or in an enterprise or in a business relationship in order to improve the fun factor, the effectiveness factor, and the value factor of a game at work, right?
Yeah, and it's really all about engagement, right? You know, we're back to the whole attention economy. So, you know, if you're able to segment your market into a few distinct subsegments, you can begin to draw those people in. Yeah, so I love this idea.
Yeah, and so because we were talking, and this individual, he was saying that he used to, he has some friends who had started up a company years ago called Leveler, which the name is so familiar. They're no longer in business, but it was L-E-V-L-R was the company, looking at gamification inside the enterprise. And like many of the early gamification things, they started by focusing on badges. And as we've talked about on this show, we don't need no stinking badges. Right? We really want to, you know, drive that engagement factor, that fun factor. And started thinking through this, and could I apply each of those types of gamers to a different type of person or organization in an enterprise? And so here was my put on the table, just to start off.
Okay.
I would say the explorer would be somebody who is doing like market analysis, unfolding the landscape of the market, understanding, you know, the ebbs and flows of market desires or market designs, etc. To really get that large strategic overview of a market. So that's my explorer example. Process, well, you know, the quester, that's a process type role. That's business process reengineering, supply chain, people who focus on
putting pieces together to make a large
understanding piece of whole. Yeah, understanding the pipeline or the flow of an activity. I think sales progression.
Oh, yeah. Sales is a quester for sure.
Yeah, it's a sales progression, because I know in many organizations you have models that say in order to get, you know, one sale, I need 10 people to try my product, 100 people to know about my product, and 1,000 people to know that I exist, right? And I'm just making those numbers up for illustrative purposes. But so what I do is I try to do a big marketing push to 1,000 people know I exist. And then I try to get 100 people to understand what the product is. And then for them, I get 10 of those people to actually try it. And so there's this progression, this sales progression model, this this concept of the quest ultimately is, as you said, to make the money at the end of the at the quest. But there's a progression. There's a logical progression. And then, you know, since both you and I come out of this background, the crafter to me is the creator of things. It could be the developer, the programmer. It could be someone who creates digital assets, something where you have these pieces that you have to figure out how to put them together to create something of value.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So that was my starting put on the table. Actually, research would be another one similar to the market insights, the type of person on the first one where you're just trying to understand the large patterns. What do you think? What can you think of any, you know, obvious misses or any other type of plays in there?
Well, a lot. And the ones that are springing to mind for me right now are, how do we apply some of the traditional job role skill set elements to these kind of classic gamer models? Because if we could say, all right, salespeople with the associated skill set that goes with sales, you know, questers kind of feel about right. There are elements of explorers and crafters that fit within the sales model as well, because you need to kind of beat the bushes to determine where the sales possibly are. And then you need to be able to craft the appropriate solution out of component bits and maybe, you know, even a surprising element of something that you don't typically craft with, you know. So where what you said to me was so exciting, and what I loved about it was that if we can create a meta type, an archetype of how people in an enterprise could be attracted to a game, then that game can be that much more effective, because you're tailoring the gamification aspects of the game to the people based upon their personality and what they like doing to begin with, and now you're amplifying that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what also gets me excited about that is not just that, but if you think about, you're building a gamification platform for an enterprise, and you want to make sure that it is engaging, you're not going to go after everything at once, right? I mean, you just can't do it. But if you start by making a very engaging game that addresses the explorers, well, you'll have some process people, you'll have some creative people or creation people who might start the game just because, you know, they need to do it for some task. But if you can start and be good on one factor as an entry point and then expand and grow the rest of the game to address some of these other needs, it not only is addressing a specific type of person, but it also helps create an offering that then has that entry point that expands out. We call that land and expand.
Then expand.
Yeah. So
strike the beaches at Normandy. We're going to expand from there.
Exactly, exactly. You know, you don't start, let's go back to Normandy. You didn't start Normandy by doing everything at once. You started probably with a propaganda war beforehand, right? You know, so there was the mind, and then you did the land, and then after you got a beachhead, you did the expand.
So one of the things that I've been thinking about as part of the overall, you know, day job aspect is, and I've used the term, and to me this is a very apt one, is the fighter magic user kind of construct, right? In enterprise,
oh man, you got to play Skyrim. I know you didn't play Skyrim, but you have to play Skyrim.
Yeah, maybe so, but you know,
it could destroy your life.
I probably could,
because I was an assassin bow wielding mage.
Yeah, it had to be fun, right?
Yeah, because I was stealthy. I had incredible accuracy with my bow. But if I wanted to, I could blow you up with a fireball.
Oh, so that kind of bow, not a staff bow. Yes.
No, like a bow and arrow. It was awesome. Awesome.
But the point where I was on was the point I was on.
The fighter magic user.
Is that it's a you're able to articulate a combination of key skills. So for the uninitiated, the fighter kind of archetype typically is your tank. It's your heavy armor. It's your big broadsword. It's your able to inflict massive amounts of damage
and
at close quarters. Accept massive amounts of damage and continue to move on. The magic user
is
on
squishy.
The other side. Is squishy, but can create enormous amounts of damage at a distance.
Yes.
But is squishy.
He's squishy. And, you get close and they're dead.
And yeah, exactly. So if you're able to combine the best of both kinds of worlds, you're able to have a very effective character in many games that allow for combinations of skills, characteristics, armaments, blah, 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 blah.
You mean like a plate armored bow wielding mage? By the way, I did wear plate too.
and we're not talking about Wedgwood, but
no,
yeah. So that is the point, and the way that I try to draw the linkages there from an enterprise IT perspective is some of the most amazing, creative, exceptional people are those that are able to talk business to business people and IT to IT people and bridge that gap.
Bridge that gap.
Mind the gap.
Yes.
Be a social bridge builder.
Be a social gap.
No. So that to me is a way of helping to explain, okay, what kinds of skills do you need in order to be successful? Now, you can't have a party that's all full of fighter magic users because then you're missing out on the
healer. You need the healer
and the assassins and the other kinds of stuff too. So if you apply those concepts to the kinds of questing, crafting, and exploring that you've described at the outset of our podcast, Michael, then I think we have the next element that says, okay, how do we take the job roles, fit them into those contexts, and then allow for creative, self-directed work teams to recognize a problem and autonomously, it's really essentially, you know, form the group that they need to form, solve the business problem, you know, and slay the dragon that they need to and go on to the next one.
Exactly.
So corporate dragon slaying, you know, this is what it's all about. I really love the idea. And I've been reading through a little bit of Ralph Koster's, you know, rules of online world design. And a further way to take what we've been just talking about here too is that we're not necessarily trying to craft and create a game that is to hit a singular purpose. You play the game, it's over, it's done. Thank you very much. I'm going home now. The best kinds of games that have repeat playability, that have an ongoing playability, that have ongoing engagement are ones that feature a number of the rules that he's outlined here. And I think we have a bit of a roadmap to say how can you apply these to companies and organizations to create not just a flash in the pan one-time deal, but something that creates that ongoing engagement and interest from the explorer, quester, crafter trilogy.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yes, I tell you.
And you know, some of those initial design rules are right there, right? Multiple paths of advancement, right? So, you know,
you can be a fighter and a magic user.
You can be a fighter and a magic user, and you can, you know, advance in multiple areas. You can develop additional skills in more than one place. You can, you know, share assets and discover more, unlocking new capabilities as you're going along. And it's defined, it's well defined, but it also is open broadly enough in order to allow for serendipity and for unexpected, you know, next steps.
Right. And the reason that you have these different open world versus, you know, the traditional, very specific, task-oriented, get your badge and move on games is both of them have their place and they both have a different problem that they're trying to solve. If you just need to get a certification, then a simple follow these steps, take the test at the end, and get your badge is probably perfectly fine and okay for that gamified process and experience, and then having multiple tests for multiple different certifications and multiple paths over time is probably okay too, right?
It could be. Yeah, it could be. Absolutely.
But if you want to have something that causes people to engage, you do need to have an ongoing engagement. You do need to have that more open world, that more multiple paths of experience, multiple paths of engagement, multiple paths of advancement idea. And by the way, I can't remember if we mentioned this on the show last week, but I'm providing guidance, support, and direction for a hackathon during my day job. And one of those things the hackathon is going through is leveraging a platform that IBM made available earlier this year called Bluemix. And I discovered as I was preparing for the hackathon that we have on that service, Bluemix, enabled a gamification service. And I just put the link to that in our chat, which will be in the show notes for people who want to look at it and maybe give us some feedback, not as part of my day job, just as part of the podcast. Have they looked at other platforms and other gamification services for improved engagement?
I'll definitely have to look at this. It's quite substantial here, what this site has to offer.
Yeah, well, that's the help site.
Well, that would explain that.
That's why it explains a lot. it's pretty cool. I haven't tried this one yet. We've got the hackathon going on next Wednesday through Friday, and I won't be on the show next week because of it. It'll be kind of cool to see if anybody uses this service in the other part of the hackathon.
Ooh, I like the game bar.
Yes.
Hey, anything with bar.
Especially on a Friday.
Oh, man.
Tell me. Using the widget.
Yeah, no, this is pretty interesting. So mission status and kind of where you are.
So, yeah, it's got badges. So, I know, I don't know. I know you had planned last week to go to an exciting event on Saturday called the Beer Festival. Did you hear anything from it? I didn't know if you were actually able to go.
No, I never made it, which was unfortunate. There were other things that were on my radar scope, so I didn't make it to the Beer Festival, which is bad because it is October, and October is the month after Oktoberfest, but right. You know, we still do Oktoberfest.
You and I had chatted, and I had planned on trying to go and getting VIP tickets and all this other stuff, and luckily, I did not get it, and was unable to get it. And now that I'm in a nice boot, so I can't do much walking or driving, I am glad I didn't get it because they would have gone to waste.
Yeah, maybe so, but you know, you would have probably been happier having a few beers in you, even if you were wearing a boot.
Well, no, a crowd walking around with this boot would not have been good. Because if anybody accidentally kicked it, I would have been writhing in pain.
Yeah, and I guess when you're around festival participants, people sometimes don't pay as much.
Whether that's a beer festival or the state fair.
Or the state fair.
And deep-fried boot is no good either. But I bet you somebody will try it.
Not me. I'm not trying it. Mm-hmm.
Unless it was dipped in bacon.
and chocolate.
So any interesting games that you're playing right now? I know you don't have much time lately, and I empathize, sympathize, and experience that myself.
No, but we were talking, actually, you and I, about looking to do perhaps a board game evening event. And we were thinking about maybe doing a meetup at Bean Traders or someplace like that and then just having some fun, you know, and just digging them out. So my oldest has a number of the modules from Nurishima Hex, and I've not actually read all the instructions of it yet, but he has sung its praises. I'm eager to give it a try. And, you know, when we get to a point where we can say, hey, you know, let's do some tabletop board gaming, we will publish that off on the Twitter site and Facebook and everything else. And if you are local loyal audience are interested in swinging on by for a game with the co-hosts, we'd love to have you.
That would be awesome. We would love to have you there. Absolutely. And we'll once we have it scheduled, we'll put a link up, as you say, on the blog, Facebook, etc., to say, come on down.
Yeah. So, Mike, what have you been playing, if anything?
Really, the only thing I did Wednesday night, I got about 30 minutes of gaming in on the
Real Racing?
No. So World of Warcraft is coming out with an expansion in November called Warlords of Draenor or Draenor or something like that, which is an expansion of the storyline that is really cool. And in front of the expansion, they did something that upset a lot of people called the Big Squish, where for every expansion since the initial release, they've been kind of going exponential on character hit points as well as defensive capabilities in order to keep up with the exponential growth of hit points of the big bad bosses at the in the end game rating, etc.
Right.
And they realized it was totally out of control. So what they did is they squished them all back down so it's more linear. And so they squished everybody, including all the creatures. So in theory, the gameplay should be the same.
But it isn't.
But people are all bent out of shape because of the squish. And as part of the squish, they also added two quests. One quest line and one dungeon that will only be there post-squish and before the release of the new expansion. And so the quest line gets you a pet. And you can do the whole quest line in a half hour. So I was like, half hour, I could probably spring that.
And did it take you only a half hour?
It took me about a half hour. The bad thing about the squish is they also reduced some of the capabilities of all the characters. And I don't mean reduced as in made them less effective, but as in wiped them out. Because they felt that there was like a core gameplay mechanic for each character class. And then over time, again, they kept adding more and more spells or attributes or whatever. And so I had a pattern with my mage. Yes, I'm a mage. that I used that was very, very powerful and very repetitive in the sense that I knew exactly the steps to take in order to do maximum amount of damage and go on to the next boss, right?
Right.
However, what happens is they removed some of those capabilities. And they did that for every type of character in the game. And so everybody's having to relearn kind of their attack sequence or their healing sequence or their defense sequence or whatever they are based off character
up,
class.
Up, down, down, left, left, right, right.
Easy. A. Exactly. And so as you can imagine, the big squish and the capability squish has upset a lot of people, as are wont to do when you have a popular game. And it'll be interesting to see how people, you know, play through it and, you know, how many new people join versus how many people leave, just like Star Wars Galaxies went from the, boy, it's really, really almost impossible ever to be a Jedi to, look, there are thousands of Jedis running around all the time. And so I think they're focusing on how do you keep the old people around, but how do you make it easy for new people to join? And that's a hard balance for them to do.
Yeah, it really is.
And I've played a half hour.
And you got a half hour out of it. So what's your pet?
So I've got about 150 pets in the game now. So this new temporary pet, well, this pet that you can only get in this temporary time period is a, how do I describe it? Did you ever watch the horror flick Phantasm?
I make it a practice to never watch horror flicks.
In the horror flick Phantasm, which I will put a link in the show notes,
which I won't look at,
there was a there was this silver ball that flew around.
Uh-huh.
And when it got to somebody's face, a spike popped out of it and stabbed him in the head.
Oh.
So that, enjoyable. That pops in my mind for the pet. So the pet is a mechanical pet. So you can have fish and birds and elementals and dragons and all kinds of different pets. So this one is a mechanical pet. And it's like a rolling sphere that kind of steampunky. That in its battle sequence, because you have these pet battles, right? I know this is gorpy and nerdy, but that's okay.
It sounds very Pokemon-esque.
It is very Pokemon-esque. They added it.
Gotta catch them all?
Yes. They added it, I think, in time for Pandaland last year, or maybe it was the year before. Yeah. Anyway, so they added... No, it was the year before. So it was the two expansions ago they added pet battles. And I have people that I play with that are really into pet battles. I'm not, but I figured if it's a rare one, I'll get it, especially since it was easy to get. It rolls around and it shoots lightning.
Ooh.
So, but now I have it.
And that is cool.
And that is cool.
All righty. Well, so,
I think we are about out of time.
We are. I was just checking, and this is where it needs to be. So I love the talk about the squish. I mean, just one fast reaction to that before we close out for the day is these sort of things do happen in companies on a regular basis too, right? You know, the experience points or levels or whatever do get squished from time to time, and you've got to go through the economics and rebalancing and recalibrating, and that's what happens. So, you know, there are so many parallels between the game world and the business world, which is why we do
GamesAtWork.biz. Cool. Well, as we say, we always value your feedback. We look forward to hearing from you, and as soon as we get board game night set up, we'll let the locals know.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, talk to you soon, and thanks, everyone, for listening in and looking forward to interacting with you on all the regular channels.
See ya.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.